Good morning. Let's jump in. For the benefit of those who weren't here last week, and for the benefit of those who were, one of my favorite lines from my favorite comedians is Victor Borge has a line about start of a famous routine. He said, "For those who have heard this, they'll enjoy hearing it again, and for those who have not, they'll enjoy hearing it again next time."
which routine is it?
Phonetic punctuation, probably, but but. So for the benefit of review and summary, I just want to jump back into the beginning of the story, and we're going to pick up from more or less where we left off. Anybody have a copy of the two pages that I distributed? Okay. I have to get my reading glasses fixed, and right now they're not working properly, so... So we're going to pick up from Pasuk Tetvav.
What character?
Chav Gimel.
It's 355. Okay, so what does it mean?
23:16. Chapter 23. Vayar David Yetzah Shaul Levakesh Et Nafsho. Actually, let's go back one pasuk. Pasuk Yudalet. Vayeshev David b'midbar b'mtzadot, vayeshev b'har b'midbar zif, vayevakshev sha'ul kol yamim v'lo netano lekim b'yado. This is kind of a summary statement that David was hiding, dwelling, running in the midbar, in the fortresses, in the mountains, in the area of midbar zif, which, as I showed you on the map last week, is sort of in the southern slope of what is known as Har Chevron, south of Chevron, that sort of heart of the area of Shevet Yehudah. Shaul seeking him, chasing him, by Yevakshu Shaul kol yamim, all the days. We don't necessarily know how long or how many days, but a period of time. David is hiding, he's running. V'lo netano lekim biyado. Kind of a summary that God has protected him and won't let Shaul harm him, but David is on the run. And that kind of sets the stage. You can just imagine, right, in it's part of the story where if this was a movie, you know, you'd have moving characters on the screen and music in the background because it's kind of depicting period of time. When David is on the run and Shaul is after him and time is passing and we don't necessarily know how long until the next episode.
Chevron is Chevron.
It's
the same area today.
It's the same Chevron as Marat the Machpelah hasn't moved. Vayar David ki yetzah Shaul levakesh et nafsho, v'tavid b'midbar zif b'chorsha. David saw that Shaul had come out to seek him. David was in midbar zif. Choresh is either the name of a place or the name or a description of a forested area. Vayakom Yonatan ben Shaul vayelech al David Chorsha. Vayechazek et yado be'elokim. Yonatan comes out to Shaul, to David. Yonatan approaches David and supports him, strengthens him, encourages him, tells him it's all going to be good. ויאמר אליו אל תירא כי לא תמצאך יד שאול אבי ואתה תמלוך ישראל. He says to him, don't be afraid, don't worry. My father Shaul is not going to catch you. You will be king over Israel. ואנוכי אהיה לך למשנה וגם שאול אבי יודע כן. You are going to be the king. I will be your second. And you know what? My father knows this too. ויכרתו שניהם ברית לפני השם וישב דוד בחורשה ונתן הלך לביתו. They made a brit in this place of Choresh, and David stayed there while Yonatan went back to his house. So this passage we spent some time talking about last week. I'm going to post the audio probably, if not today, tomorrow, So you'll have, if you weren't here, you'll have a chance to catch up. It's a very important conversation. It's a very important brit that they make between them. And more importantly, it articulates certain ideas we haven't had before. We've talked about them, but they're articulated here for the first time. Yonatan's acknowledgement that David will be the next king, and that the lineage of Shaul could theoretically continue as a kind of second. David was still Shaul's son-in-law. He still had a claim, a legitimate claim to the throne, if Yonatan stepped aside. Yonatan makes that offer to David. They make a brit. Those are the themes we talked about last week. But in the end, as we've seen several times already, Yonatan goes home. David stays in hiding. He will not join him, but he will express loyalty to him, which helps him only a little bit, but doesn't really help him a lot.
So, I don't know if you talked about this. How come David can't find him?
Right, so that we did talk about it, and I'm going to pick up from that piece. I'm going to pick up from that piece because that's going to be the segue into today's show. But yes, Shaul can't find him. Yonatan seems to be able to. We'll talk about that momentarily. Pasuk Yud Tet. Vaya'alu zifim el Shaul ha-givata lemor halo David mistater imanu b'mtsadot b'chor sha b'givata chachila shem imina yishimon. Zifim, zifites. Not necessarily all of them. It doesn't say ve'alu hazifim, but some of them. Approach Shaul in Giv'ah. Giv'ah is Givat Shaul, Shaul's home, palace, seat of his throne. Approached Shaul and said to him that David is hiding amongst us in the fortresses of the forest, in the hiding places, Givat HaChachila, near Shimon. They disclosed to Shaul David's location.
Where did they get their information?
Well, he's in Ziph. David is hiding in Ziph. These are Ziphites.
Where they are.
These are locals. The locals know where David is, right? They're hiding him. They're protecting him. So some of them were not so nice. Mm-hmm. And they went and informed on him to Shaul and told Shaul exactly where he's hiding. However, Shaul has had too much experience chasing after David only to find that by the time he gets there, he's David gone. Is gone. So Yata, I jumped ahead. V'yata l'cholavat nafshecha melech levedet red. V'lanu hasgiro b'yad melech. Now it is, if it please the king, if it is the king's desire, the king should come down, and it is our task to hand him over to the king. V'yomer Shaul, ruchim atem la'ashem ki chamaltem alai. Shaul gives them a bracha. Blessed are you. You had compassion on me. Lechuna achinu od. Udu ra'u et makomo asher tiyeh raglo. Mi ra'au sham. Ki amar le arom ya'arim hu. Now go and finish the task. Find a little more information. I want to know every place where David goes. And who saw him? Because I have been told that he is cunning.
Hmm.
Meaning, every time I run after him, he's gone, right? We had this in Keilah. He was told that he's in Keilah. He came out started to bring his forces out, and with him, David left. So, somehow, David had information that Shaul was on his way. Shaul is not quite sure how David gets his information. Ura'u da'u mikol ha-machavo'im ashi'yitchabesha. Go and find all of the hiding places, all the hidey holes where David hides. Shavtem elayo nachon v'lachti etchem. Come back and tell me, inform me, and then I will come with you. And then anywhere he is, I will be able to find him in all of the clans and tribes of Judah. So he comes and he chases him. He comes. Shaul brings all of his people after David into Midbar Ma'on. Vayelach Shaul v'anashav levakesh v'yagidu leDavid v'yered haSela v'yeshev b'Midbar Ma'on. David is informed that Shaul is on his way, goes southward towards the mountain Sela rock in Midbar Ma'on. V'yishma Shaul v'yerdof acharei David Midbar Ma'on. Shaul hears and he comes chasing after. Vayelach Shaul mitzad ha'am izeh, v'David v'anashav mitzad ha'am izeh. David and his forces are on one side of the mountain. Shaul and his forces are on the other side of the mountain. Vayid David nechpaz lelechet mimnei Shaul, v'shaul v'anashav otrim el David ve'el anashav litofsam. As David is running from Shaul, Shaul is surrounding David, meaning Shaul's forces separate, kind of like a pincer attack, kind of meet David in the middle, and David really has nowhere to run. And 6 inches from being caught, Malach ba el Shaul lemor, Maharav velecha. Come quickly, King Saul. It's time for you to go. The plishtim are wreaking havoc. Right, you're down here in the south, chasing David. In the meantime, the plishtim are enjoying a free range because you've taken the army with you. So the plishtim have encroached upon the land. We need you and your army up north. So at that very last second, as he was literally within hand's grasp of David, Vayashov Shaul Mirdof Achre David. So Shaul stepped back from chasing David and went after the plishtim. Al ken karu l'makom mahu sela hamachlekot. Therefore, that name is called the Rock of Machlekot. What that means, I will come back to. That's a subject of discussion for today. What is the machlekot, the division that this rock represents? That's the story as we kind of looked at it last week. Last week we looked at a number of pieces, particularly we spent most of our time talking about the conversation between Yonatan and David and its implication. And at the end of the shiur, which is where we're going to pick up today, I mentioned part of the mystery of how Yonatan finds David. Shaul can't find him, but somehow Yonatan can. And that by in and of itself may not be surprising considering the fact that Yonatan and David have a brit between them, and so it's possible that Yonatan was in communication with David where Shaul was not, although I doubt it. Given the nature of Shaul's intelligence and effort to find him, etc., I doubt that Yonatan was in constant communication with David during this time. That, I think, would be too much.
Where is Yonatan now?
With Shaul, and for the most part with Shaul and his army.
So he's with the army,
I would assume. So how does he come to find Shaul? That was one problem. The other problem that we raised is a little more subtle, but it's connected. And that is the chronology here is a little bit off, because it tells us that Shaul comes to chase David at the beginning of the story. It tells us that Shaul is chasing David at the end of the story. But in the middle of the story, it tells us that the Ziphites came to inform on David to Shaul in Givat Shaul, which is all the way up north. So just to do a quick reference on these psukim, Pasuk Tet Vav. Vayar David ki etza Shaul levakesh et nafsho, v'David b'mibar Zif b'chorsha. David saw that Shaul had come out to chase him in Choresh, which is why Shaul, right? I'm in Pasuk Tetvav. David saw that Shaul had come, Ki Yatsa Shaul had come to chase him in, or to seek him in Choresh. And David was in Midbaziv. At which time Yonatan came, Vayakom Yonatan ben Shaul Vayelech al David Choresh. Yonatan comes to Choresh to find him. Then Pasuk Yitet, Vayalu Zifim el Shaul Givata Lemor lo David Mistater Imanu. Pasuk Yitet, the Ziphites come to Shaul to inform Shaul that David is in Midbar Zif, but that conversation is taking place in Givat Shaul, which is up north, near north of Yerushalayim, which is Shaul's home base. And then in Pasuk Chavhei, Vayelech Shaul v'anashav levakesh v'yagidu leDavid v'yered asalamach v'yeshev b'midbar ma'on. David is told, Shaul goes with his people to find David, to seek David, and David runs. So the irony of this parak is that David hears that Shaul is found him in Midbar Zif. Next pasuk, or next paragraph, the Zifites are going up north to Givat Shaul to tell Melech Shaul that David is in Zif. And then a few psukim later, we're back to the chase. So this is the chronological disconnect in this sequence. So to address both of these questions, both how Yonatan finds him as well as the question of the chronology here, really the only way to read this parak, I think, is the suggestion of the Radak. I threw it out last week at the very end of the class, but we're going to start with now. Source 2. When it says in the very beginning, Vayar David, the first pasuk that I quoted, pasuk Tetvav, David saw that Shaul had come to seek him, to chase him. Everybody see where the Radak is, what the Radak is addressing? Yes.
Maybe you've answered this before, but how long would that journey be?
I'll give you a simple answer. If you went straight from Beersheva, from Hebron to Yerushalayim, on a straight path across the top of the mountain, together with your donkeys and a couple of lads and some provisions, it would take 3 days. How do I know?
Did you do it?
You've done it.
No, but somebody else famous did.
You walk there.
That's precisely the path of the Akedah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right, from Hebron to Yerushalayim.
But do we know exactly, does it say there how many days it took?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And then
and third day, Ve'arat HaMakom Rechob. Right. So,
and from...
So Zif is a little bit south of Hebron. If you've had Rom Har Hebron, it's called today. It's not long.
No, but
it's just that in those days you're traveling, not just traveling along the roads, but you're traveling with an army, and you're traveling along, and you're hiding, and you're trying to find, like it's, and
right,
there's
but
settlements.
If somebody traveling as a messenger could go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Back and forth, no problem. Yeah. No problem. We're not dealing with. Look at on this map. Here's Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. Givah is just a little bit north of Yerushalayim. Here's Hebron, and then we're in this area here. Okay. Here's En Gedi. We're in this area here. So we're not that.
It's a relatively short distance.
Correct. Okay. It's a relatively short area. This is all the heart of Shevet Yehuda. This is where David is hiding because he's going back and forth. If you look at that map, top left corner is Gat. Look at the triangle, Yerushalayim, Gat, and then down into the heart of. I think Arad is on this map. Is Arad on this map? No. You're in this area here. This triangle right here. Yerushalayim, Dvir, Hebron, Gat, Beit Shemesh, and Gedi. This is the region.
Did he
just follow story of the map? The numbers here are the story of David from the very beginning of David's flight till the end of the sefer, really. We haven't gotten to some of it, but yes, the numbers here are the sequence. It starts 1, 2, 3 up in the top, which is Nov, and then David runs to Gat, from there he runs to Moav, 4 to 5, from there he runs to Keilah, which is 6, 6 and 7 down here, transfers his family to Moab, runs back to Kiriath. Because remember, David is going back and forth. That's part of what we've seen, that David starts here in Gat, comes all the way down to Moab, then he comes back, goes back up to Keilah, which was the previous story that we did. Right. And the Keilah, then he hears that the people of Keilah are going to hand him over to Shaul, so he runs, and now he's running from Keilah, he ran to Midbar Zif. And so you have from Gat to Marat Adulam, he gathers his people, to Moab, back to Keilah, now to Midbar Zif, and then from there to En Gedi. So he's traveling length wise, he's going back and forth through the heart of Shevet Yehuda, because that's his only safe harbor to an extent, which is the people. Everything north of Yerushalayim belongs to Binyamin, and there certainly David is not going to tread. So coming back to our story, David, at the very beginning of the story, Pasuk Tetvav, David hears that Shaul is chasing him, and yet the Ziphites come to him, come to Shaul in Givat Shaul. So where is Shaul? So the Radak suggests that our sequence of events in this chapter are somewhat out of order. Vayar David, when the Pasuk in Tetvav, the beginning, says that David saw that Shaul was coming after him, ki hikir David ki Shaul yatsa levakesh et nafsho sham b'midbar Zif. How did David hear that Shaul was coming after him in Midbar Zif? Ki shama ki azifim amru lo ki hu mistater sham. He heard that the Ziphites had informed on him to Shaul in Givat Shaul. Therefore, his intention was to, in fact, leave Midbar Zif, because he heard that Shaul had received information from the Ziphites. Uben kach ba elav Yonatan sham v'kartu brit shnehem. In the meantime, Yonatan comes to him in Chosha and in Zif and tells him not to worry. Yonatan went on his way. David stayed in Choresh. Kasher shama ki Shaul ba, and then he hears that David is, Shaul is actually on his way. So then alach lo midbar ma'on, v'samuch midbar ziv. So then he left and he went further south. The big chiddush that the Radak is suggesting, just to kind of put it back into the text, is that our events are out of order. And that if I come back to the text, Pasuk Tetvav, Vayar David, ki yetza Shaul levakesh nafsho v'David b'midbar ziv b'chorsha, from that Pasuk, till the end of Pasuk Yud Chet, the whole conversation with Yonatan, you have to put all of that inside the middle of Pasuk Chav Hei. Ve'elach Shaul v'anashav levakesh v'yagidu l'David. Meaning, chronologically, the sequence of events starts with David hiding in Choresh, in Zif, and the Ziphites going to Shaul to inform him that David is hiding amongst them. So, Pasuk Yutet, Ve'yalu Zifim el Shaul, all the way to the end of the paragraph, that's happening first. And so Shaul and his army, ostensibly together with Yonatan, begin to emerge from Givat Shaul to chase David. They now know where David is because the Ziphites have informed on him. David hears, Pasuk Tetvav, Vayar David, ki yetza Shaul. David saw that Shaul was coming after him and had in every intent of leaving Midbar Zif. Yonatan comes to him in Midbar Zif, Vayakum Yonatan ben Shaul vayelech al David Chosha. And he says to him, you're safe, don't worry, then my father's never going to catch you. But that conversation is taking place in the middle of the campaign. It's not like Shaul is in Givat Shaul, Yonatan leaves, finds David, Shaul doesn't know where he is, Yonatan does. Right? It's not that complicated. Yonatan's part of Shaul's army. Shaul now knows exactly where David is. So does Yonatan. Yonatan just scouts ahead. Scouts ahead and finds David and says to him, my father's coming, but he's not going to catch you. And initially, David had intended to stay in Choresh, or stay in Midbar Zif, after the breach with Yonatan, until he heard that Shaul's forces were in fact approaching, and so he went further south. But the big piece of this, sort of the chronology here, is that it's not Shaul coming out to find him, Yonatan finding him in secret, then going back to Givat Shaul, and then the Zivites going handing him in. The sequence is much more logical. The Ziphites start. David is now in trouble. His hiding place has been disclosed, and now he has to move south, and we get to the story of Salah Machloket. Do you understand the sequence that the Daka is suggesting? Raises the question, of course, each time that you take psukim out of order, why is it written this way?
Right.
Anytime you rearrange the psukim, you can reorder the logical structure of the text, but you really have to address the question of why is it written that way. And in this case, it's one of those examples that I think is pretty classic. What you have in the story is essentially two stories, and they're separated. Story one is Yonatan. Story two is Shaul. So in order not to break the momentum of either story, and this Tanakh will do often, kind of finish story A and then move to story B, even though story B is taking place before story A. We've had this by Pilagish Begiva, we've had this in a number of different instances in Tanakh, where we've looked at the fact that we'll take one story, break it up into constituent parts, tell one story to its conclusion, then the second story to its conclusion, then the third story, even though chronologically you have to kind of do this. Fine. That's only part of the picture. The other part of the picture is that by separating them, it heightens the sense of the dilemma that Yonatan faces. Why does it heighten the dilemma for Yonatan?
He doesn't know where to put his loyalties.
He doesn't know where to put his loyalties. And let's put it this way. Does Yonatan fight with Shaul against David? Does Yonatan participate in the mirdaf, in the chase for David?
You said he was part of the army.
Right. If I read the events in sequence, the answer would be yes, because that's how he finds them. Yeah. And so it only kind of heightens the challenge or the tension that Yonatan faces. On the one hand, he's his closest friend and ally, made a brit with him. This is the third brit that they've made. And on the other hand, he's standing next to Shaul's father as he's giving orders to find and kill David on the spot. So you feel that tension. Now, by separating the two stories, what do I do for Yonatan? By putting the story of Yonatan first,
he's not put in that position.
Right, he's not. You disconnect Yonatan from the army, you disconnect Yonatan from the battle, and how does the story end? How does the little conversation with Yonatan conclude? Vayeshev David b'chorshav, Yonatan halach levetov. By bringing the story of Yonatan and isolating it, one of the conclusion of it is Yonatan went home. He didn't go home, he went back to the battle. Eventually he went home. But by separating the story out, number one, the story of Shaul gets told in sequence without interruption. But number two, Yonatan's predicament, Yonatan's story, gets separated out, and you get a sense of the internal moral conflict going on inside Yonatan. And he doesn't want to be part of Shaul's army. He would rather go home. David would rather him
stay with him.
And so he's torn in not two directions, but three.
Right.
Yonatan, there's nothing more ironic than the statement of Yonatan alach leveto. Because he didn't go home. If he's part of this story, then he's part of the campaign. He's still on the battlefield. And he comes to him from the battlefield to return to the battlefield. From Yonatan's perspective, he helped David hide. He helped him protect him. Then he gets to go home. From David's perspective, it's the third time. Why don't you stay with me? Right?
Beto referred to his father also?
It can. It can, although it'd be odd here in this reference, but yeah, it could, but I don't... It's a... When you're talking about geographic locations, v'echutush nem brit, v'yeshev David b'chor shavi, natan alach l'veto, you could... On the level of drash, you could say Beto means his father, not on the level of pshat, right? It's too many instances where we have this this connection between them. They meet, and then it concludes with Vayakom Vayelach VeYonatan Bahair. The last time they had this brit, right? Yonatan, David went on the journey, and Yonatan went back to the city. The contrast is between the fact that he goes home. So,
why wouldn't we have a sentence here about Yonatan telling Shaul anything? I mean, he's still part of the army. Why would he not go back? Is he just, this Brit is making him stay with David and not tattletaling on where he is?
Yeah, Yonatan is certainly not going to tattle on David. He's not going to hand David over to his father. That's certainly not what he's going to do. But he has no choice but to participate in this campaign. I mean, that's the. Can you imagine if they actually met on the battlefield? Yes, what Yonatan would do?
That would be.
Thank God it never happens. But you can only imagine, right?
Is he still in denial, though, that he tells David that he's not going to be hurt by his father, even though we know that Shaul really would kill him if he could?
No, I don't think he's in denial. I think he thinks that by that. I think he thinks in this case that. Shaul is not going to find him. Again, Yonatan's. This is the last conversation they will ever have, by the way. Mm-hmm. They will never meet again.
No,
I'll see. By the end of the sefer, right. This is the last face-to-face communication they have, and then at the end of the sefer, Yonatan dies in Har Gabbah together with Shaul.
Right.
So they will never meet again. And. But Yonatan's the tragedy of Sefer Shmuel. There's no question. Yonatan is the tragic figure of Sefer Shmuel. He's torn, he's conflicted. He is, in the end, he dies. We don't spend enough. We don't give Yonatan enough. In the language of the newspaper, enough column inches to really give him. Focus of the story, but he really was conflicted, and I think he made some very tragic mistakes. We talked about that the last time they had a Brit, and it said that they were crying, and David cried more, because David understood the consequences of Yonatan's decision to return home. This is the third time they've met, they made a Brit, and Yonatan returned home. And that's not an accident. Yeah.
Actually, what I was going to ask is, was this kind of another
opportunity for him to fix that? Maybe. We don't know what would happen had Yonatan at this moment stayed with David, but I've argued all along that, especially here when he's articulated for the very first time, and we've guessed it, we've thought about it, we've intimated it. The Ramban, that I talked about last week, the Ramban says it explicitly in his commentary on Sefer Breshit, that David has an access to the throne legitimately and legally. All it requires is for Yonatan to step aside. This is the first and only time where Yonatan articulates that explicitly. Which brings us this close to ending this entire conflict b'shalom. Because all you need is for that recognition to become public. For Yonatan to publicize that, and suddenly David has a very legitimate claim to the throne after Shaul's. The whole story changes. But it doesn't happen. Yonatan halach leveito, goes back to house, palace, household, father, lineage, dynasty, however you want to define it. But he doesn't stay with David. And that's the tragedy. Okay, next issue. The Ziphites. Who are these Ziphites? We don't know a lot about them. Ziph is a area of the tribe of Judah. It's mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua. It's part of Shevet Yehuda. However, there's a reason why these two stories are in one chapter. Ke'ilah and Ziph. They're two different stories. Ke'ilah was the last beginning of the parak. Ziph is the last part of the parak. They're two completely different stories. He's in two different places, two different events. Why are they in one chapter? Does anybody understand the question? The first half of the story was about David and Ke'ilah. Plishtim attacked Ke'ilah, which was on the coast, near Gat. David went out to save them. You have it on the map. And then after he saved them, the people of Keilah went. He was told by God that the people of Keilah were going to hand him over to Shaul, so he ran. Now, next story, completely different place, Midbar Zif. Why is it in the same parak? What connects them?
The
Plishtim at the end connect to some extent, but I think there's a much more direct connection.
It's the same thing because he said that he was going to turn him over and
right.
He ran away.
It's the issue of the tension with the people of Judah. The conflict, if this parak was about the conflict, if it's another reason why the story of Yonatan's in the middle.
And it parallels.
There's a structure on either side. There's the story of Keilah, there's the story of Zif, and there's the story of Yonatan in the middle.
Right.
These are people who should be loyal to David. I would expect them to be loyal to David. Not number one, they're from his tribe, except for Yonatan, but certainly the people of Keilah and the people of Zif are from his own tribe. Number two, they understand that David is innocent. Number three, in the case of Keilah, he actually just saved the entire city. So I would expect them to be loyal to him. And yet, in Yonatan's case, they're ambivalent. And in the case of Keilah and Zif,
they're going to turn him over.
In Zif, there seems to me a mixed bag. I mean, because they haven't turned him over, and only part went to Shaul. So don't you think there's a mixture in that place?
Well, let me throw it back. In Keilah, what happened? What happened in Keilah? Did they hand David over to Shaul?
He ran away.
He ran away before they had the chance. Meaning, how did he know that they were going to?
So there was a mixed.
How did they know that the people of Keilah were going to hand him over to Shaul?
Because
God told them. So the progression here works from the other way around. The progression here is that in Keilah they don't do anything. He's told by God, you know what? There's an intention here. There's a murmur. There's a possibility that these people are going to turn you over. Don't get involved. Run. So he runs, and he runs to Zif. In Zif, the progression gets worse, not better. Because in Zif, they go and tattle. And they may not be everybody, but they do go. And so we've gone from the potential of the people turning against him to people who really do. And this is the world that David is in. David is escaping, running, fleeing, trying to find safe harbor in his own backyard. He's protecting these people. He's fighting for them. And some of them will protect him, some of them will hide from him. But on the other hand, there are those who just...
Well, this is much worse because they outright went.
They go and they don't know.
Place, they didn't.
Why? Both by Keilah and by Zif, I think the justification is the same, or the rationale from their perspective is the same. In the case of Zif, you see it, you hear it. Why are the people of Zif? Because they're evil, wicked people who want to side with Shaul and get rid of David no matter what? No, on the contrary. Right? Why are they going to Shaul and informing on him, on David?
They're just plain people.
He's their king. Okay. Maybe. I hear it. That justifies taking an innocent soul who's done nothing but protect them, nothing but loyal to him and to the king, and handing them over.
Didn't Saul kill all of King?
Well, I think there's a fear that is chasing on the heels of David. There's a fear that kind of hovers like a cloud over the entire region, and that's the aftermath of Nov. Mm-hmm. It haunts David, and I think it frightens the people of Keilah and Zif. I think it frightens all of Shevet Yehudah. How much protection does David have
when
the threat is that anybody who harbors David is going to be killed? I would even argue that you can hear the fear of Zif in their own words. Because if you go to the pasuk in which they converse with Shaul, which is pasuk Chaf,
I'll be quiet.
V'yata. This is the Ziphites talking to Shaul. V'yata l'chol avat nafshecha ha-melech laredet red v'lanu hazgiro b'yad ha-melech. There's a certain irony in that pasuk. It's the overemphasis on the word melech. If it pleased the king, chalavat nafshecha melech, to come down, and it will be our task to hazgiro, to extradite him, to hand him over to hamelech, to the king. And there's this sense that they're there because.
They're talking to the king.
Yeah. But they're talking to the king with the capital K, meaning the authority, the power, the head of the army, the one who's just executed all the people of Nov for having harbored David, who destroyed the Mishkan. Right, this is a king who has become ruthless. And there's another hint to this fear, and that's the phrase L'chol Avat Nafshecha. Cholavat nafshecha is a very strange expression.
Here is now according to all thy heart's desire.
Right, but it's a phrase that's used very carefully in Tanakh. The first place we find the phrase avat nafshecha. Anybody know?
It's not on the test.
None of this is on the test. The first place the phrase Avat Nafshecha appears is actually in Chumash, in the context of a contrast between meat that comes from a korban and non-consecrated chulin meat that comes from meat nuts outside of the context of the temple. Why is that significant? I'll show you in a moment. But if you turn to Parshat Re'eh, Devarim Perek Yud Bet. Starting Pasuk Chaf, verse 20.
226.
Ki yarchiv Hashem elokecha et gvulcha.
227.
And God will expand your borders, your boundaries. Kasher diberlach, as he promised he would. You're coming to the land of Israel, going to be living in an entire land. Biamarta ochla basar. And you say, I want to eat meat. Ki sa'aveh nafshecha le'achol basar. Your heart desires to eat meat. So b'cholavat nafshecha t'achol basar. According to your heart's desire, you can eat meat. Ki yirchak mincha makom mishivcha Hashem elokecha l'asum shmo sham. The place that God has chosen to place his name, they will be far away. Meaning, you can no longer do what we do here in the desert. What do we do here in the desert? If you want to have a barbecue for dinner, what do you have to do? In the desert, if you wanted meat, what did you have to do? You have to bring a korban. To bring a korban shlamim. The same way we make a bracha over food in the desert, if you wanted to eat meat, you had to make a bracha. What was the bracha? A portion had to be given to the mizbeach. A portion had to go to the. There was no such thing as eating meat outside of a korban. All meat, if you wanted to have fleshichs, you had to bring it as a korban. That was if you lived in proximity to the Mishkan, because you lived in a camp that surrounded the Mishkan. You're going to come into the land of Israel. Your Mishkan is now going to be sitting in Shiloh or Nov or Yerushalayim or wherever it's going to be. And you're going to be living in Metula. You're not going to go run to the Beit HaMikdash every time you want to have fleshichs for dinner. So the Torah creates an allowance for non-consecrated meat outside of the ritual of Korbanot. The first moment that this exists in the Torah. V'zevachta mibokorcha mitzoncha shenatan lacha Hashem lach kasher tziviticha. So you'll slaughter the animal as you are so commanded and instructed. V'achalta b'sharecha, you'll eat it in your gates, b'chol avat nafshecha, according to your heart's, the soul's desire. With certain restrictions, you have to shecht it, and you have to eat it, and you can't eat the blood. And continues to talk about the various... But this is referred to in the halacha as basar ta'va. Interesting phrase. It's referred to in the halacha as meat of desire. Which is the technical term for non-consecrated meat. Anytime you have fleishchus, you are eating basar ta'va. This is not a commercial for vegetarianism. This is a fact. Okay? Torah describes meat as meat of desire because you desire non-consecrated meat. The phrase, however, became a catchphrase for anything that which is non-consecrated, that which is not kodesh, that which is the opposing force of the mikdash or the malchut. And so kings that are reigning without the authority of the Navi are called kings that are reigning cholavat nafsham. They can do what they want. They can do according to their heart's desire. It's a phrase that appears in the Nevi'im several times. And I apologize, I don't have the references. This one, these references I didn't have to pull off the top of my head. But it's a phrase that appears in the Nevi'im several times to refer to kings when they go a path that's not supported by the Navi. Because it's borrowed from this world of the Mikdash is Kodesh, and outside of the Mikdash is B'cholavat Nafshecha. So when the people of Zif say to Shaul, in kind of whether it's conscious or subconscious, I don't know, or maybe it's the language that the Navi inserted into the conversation, but when they say to him, V'yata l'chol avat nafshecha melech laredet reid, satisfy your soul, satisfy your desire, satisfy, let the king act according to his soul's desire in a non-consecrated context, it's a phrase that just doesn't sit well. But I think it's part of this picture of what Shaul has become and what this chase is about. This pursuit is not about the command of the Navi or the instruction of the Navi or the mandate of Malchus or the mandate of kingship. Right? This pursuit is very personal. This pursuit is very subjective to his own desire. To Shaul has become the antithesis. Here is Shaul who's just destroyed the Mishkan. And if you talk about the contrast between the korban meat of the Mishkan and meat that's eaten outside of the Mishkan, and that's called basar tava. Here, cholavat nafshecha. Here's Shaul has just destroyed the Mishkan, and the people of Zif say to him, "Okay, cholavat nafshecha, tochal basar."
It's like they know exactly what his motivation.
Conscious or subconsciously, but imagine the phrase, "Cholavat nafshecha, tochal basar." Consume meat according to your heart's desire. Which meat is Shaul going to consume? Just finished consuming the meat of Nov. Now he's going to consume the meat of David. It's a very crass and a very harsh language. I think it's a reflection of the fear that they have and the sense of what just happened in Nov.
So they're actually petrified.
I think that's the sense that. And from here, David is going to run to a third location, yeah, but a different location than the previous two. Here he's going to run the very last pasuk of the parak, parak of Gimel. Vayal David Misham, vayeshev b'mtzadot Ein Gedi. He runs to Ein Gedi. It may be a pretty place, but it's also a desolate place. There's no tourist center in Ein Gedi.
Not then.
Okay.
Not then.
It is a desert wilderness. It is a place without inhabitations. It's not a surprise that he runs to Ein Gedi. Why does he run to Ein Gedi?
Nobody.
There's nobody there to inform on him. Right? Kila informed on him, Zif informed on him, he runs to Ein Gedi, there's nobody there. But that's the tragedy of it. He's looking for safe harbor amongst his own tribe. He's just, think about the progression. In Keilah was a city filled with people. Sitting on the border, it was a border town, it was a populated area. David came into Keilah to save the people of Keilah from the Plishtim. And they informed, were going to inform him. So he comes to Midbazif. Midbazif is a midbar. It's not a yeshuv. It's a midbar. There are areas, there are Zifites, there are people who live there, but it's a midbar. Midbar Shimon. He's hiding in the hills outside of civilization because it's a little dangerous to walk into civilization, and yet they inform on him. So where does he go to next?
En
Gedi, where there's nothing. And you sense the trajectory and the tragedy of this story of David's life. So I wanted to share with you two places in Sefer Tehillim where I think you hear the challenge that David is facing.
And his family, the whole entourage? Where are they?
Which part of the entourage? His personal family or his 600 men? His personal family is dead.
Yeah.
They were all killed by Moabites.
Okay. The Moabites.
So they're now gone. Okay.
Right.
And the 600 men?
They're with them.
Everybody's with them.
They are with them. So take a look, and if you turn the page over, I've given you two quotes from Sefer Tehillim with the English translation to kind of just help us along a little bit. The first is, this actually needs a little bit of introduction. L'mnitzach m'ginot maskilu David bevo hazifim v'yamru l'sha'ul alo David mistater imanu. This psalm, chief musician, for a string instrument, the maskil, a psalm of David, when the Ziphites came to Sha'ul and said, David hides with us. So now you have a parak that's specifically referenced to our story. There's a huge debate amongst the commentaries of Sefer Tehillim whether or not David wrote these chapters at this time, or whether or not these are chapters written by David, sung by David, borrowed by David, whatever the circumstances are, that were then applicable to the specific circumstances that the heading identifies. From our perspective, it doesn't matter, because the text links the two, but there's usually somewhere in the text that we feel that the story reflected. Elokim, b'shimcha oshieni u'b'gvuatcha tidineni. God, hear my prayer. God, save me. Judge me by your strength. What do you mean, judge me? Why would David say to God, judge me?
It's in your hands whether I'm going to be turned over or not.
True. Okay, so there's an element of he's standing on the edge, and it's in God's hands. But would you normally turn to your judge and the person who's in whose hands life and death is and say to him, judge me? Right?
Maybe he's asking for direction.
Maybe, but when would you normally, when would you stand with confidence before the judge and say, go ahead, judge me?
When you know you're right.
When you know you're right. Right? If you were not clear in the outcome of that, you wouldn't have that kind of confidence. Tidineni, judge me, meaning I'm innocent, I'm being pursued falsely and unjustifiably. Dineni, if you want to bring this to a judgment, so do so. But Elokim, shma tfilati, hazina le'imefi, hear my prayers, give ear to the words of my mouth, ki zarim kamu alai, v'aritzim bikshu nafshi, for strangers have risen up against me and oppressors seek my soul. Losamu Elokim l'negdam sela. They have not set God before them. They are not God fearing.
But the people that rose up against him weren't strangers. They were from his shevet.
Strangers in the sense that they didn't.
They weren't on his side.
They were, yeah. Either strangers that they weren't on his side, or that they were not his inner circle. They were just total strangers. He walked into Midbazif and he doesn't know these people. He's never met them before in his life. Right, they might be from a shevet, but they're not. They had no nothing to, I mean, I guess they had something to gain by it in terms of sparing their own lives, but kamu alive aritzim bikshim, I didn't harm them, is what he means. I didn't do anything to them. Complete non-strangers from my perspective. Hine Elokim ozer li Hashem b'sumchei nafshi. Help me, God. Yashiv hara l'shadarai ba'amitcha ha'atzmitem. Rewards evil to my enemies. There's an element of Sefer Tehillim that is vengeful, which is not our subject for now, but that is a much broader conversation. But you hear the angst, specifically in this instance. From the turmoil of Ziph, he runs to En Gedi. And what do we find by En Gedi? Another parak of Tehillim. Mizmor le David, biyoto b'midbar Yehuda. Psalm of David, when he was in running through the wilderness of Judah. Elokim, Eli ata, ashachareka. God, you are my God, I seek you. Tzom alecha nafshi. My soul thirsts for you. Notice in the previous parak, aritzim bikshu nafshi. The strangers, the oppressors, sought my soul. Now my soul thirsts for God. Why is he thirsting for God? Why the reference to thirst? Because in the desert. Kamalach habsari, my flesh longs for you. Be'eretz tziyah ve'ayef b'limayim, in a land that is dry and thirsty without water. And I yearn to seek the Kodesh, ki wa Kodesh chaziticha lirot uzachav chvodecha, to see your power, your glory, as I have seen you in your sanctuary. The sense of David being lost in this wilderness, it's hard for us to put ourselves into that picture, but here is David Midbar Yehuda, promised the world, son-in-law to the king, promised kingship, fought the battles, the great warrior, fought the battles of the Plishtim. The people of his own tribe are turning against him out of fear, and he's forced into hiding and the run.
In
Midbar Yehuda, in Midbar Yeshimon, in Midbar En Gedi, he can't even run into places that are inhabited, because the very places that are inhabited are dangerous to him. And your heart pangs for him. And this is really the most tragic part of his life in some regard. And there are other tragedies that befall him later, but some of those are of his own doing, so there's less of a... All right. Adkan Hakafa Aleph. That's Ziph, Midbar Yehuda, and En Gedi. One more piece of this puzzle that I want to spend a moment on. We have a few minutes left. And that is the name of this place. Sela Machlokot. Sela HaMachloket, it's often referred to as, but it's really Sela HaMachlokot.
What's the difference?
That's a very good question.
Wait, where is this?
What is the difference?
It's that line.
Well, they come from the same root, but they mean different things.
The last two words.
So let's come back to the end of the story. Pasuk Chav Vav. Vayelech Shaul mitzad ahar mizeh, v'David v'anashav mitzad ahar mizeh. Have this moment, this picture. David and his forces on one side of the mountain. Shaul and his forces are on the other side of the mountain. Vahi David nechpaz lalechet. David is running quickly, trying to quickly escape from Shaul, mipnei Shaul. Shaul v'anashav otrim el David ve'el anashav l'tosam. Shaul and his forces are encircling, like a crown, oter, encircling David to capture. Umalach baal Shaul emor, marav alecha ki pashtu plishtim al haaretz. Malach came, it's machloket, Mefarshim and Machloket on the Medrash. Just, I'll give you a quick reference, take a look at source 5. You'll see it in the two sources in the Medrash. Malach Baal Shaul, Rebbe Omer, Malach min Hashamayim haya, Rebbe Yudan Omer, Malach Shaliach haya. A Malach can be a messenger representative, right? Like the name of the Navi called Malachi. Hineni Shalech la. It's in Navi Malachi. But Malachi is my messenger. A Malach can also be an angel. So who came to Shaul at this moment to tell Shaul that he's needed up north? An angel or a messenger? Or maybe the answer is
both.
Meaning a messenger who was unwittingly and unknowingly acting as a shaliach of the Ribbono Shel Olam, right, which is what an angel is. All right. Clearly, Yad Hashem has entered into the picture, and David's life is spared at the last second by a political turmoil that was created by
God.
Yes and yes. Right? Created by God to save David, but created by the Plishtim, because that's exactly the challenge here. Now, the fact that the Plishtim have encroached from a geopolitical perspective is not a surprise, because
they wanted to
take over. Attention to them.
Because Shaul has not been paying attention to them, and Shaul has taken all of his forces down into the chase of after David, which means he's left the country vulnerable. So whose fault is it that the Plishtim are encroaching?
Shaul's.
And this is the dilemma that Shaul has been put in. Just for a moment, sympathize with Shaul for a second. At this particular moment in time, he's faced with a critical conflict of two interests. Namely,
he's trying to kill him.
His interest to catch David, he's literally within a hair's breadth of doing so, and
he's got
responsibility to
the
people of Israel, right, and the fact that they are falling prey to the Plishtim.
Well, he didn't seem to care about that. There's other times to
correct. Him. He so. Hasn't. He wasn't so caring about it when it came to Keilah. Mm-hmm. We saw that was a problem, and so you have to wonder what he's going to do here.
And change your heart.
Right? If we didn't know the end of the story, here is Shaul, paranoid, crazed with fear and anger. For years, for months, if not years, been chasing after this fugitive called David, was his son-in-law, betrayed, and he's within a grasp of him. And he's told by his chief he's needed up north in the battle. What do you think true to his character, what would we have expected him to do?
Finish
the campaign.
That's what he's been doing every time.
And what does it say? Vayashav Shaul Mirdof Acharei David. He retreats from his pursuit of David. Vayelech Likrat Plishtim. This story ends with a moment of light for Shaul. To his credit, he, at this last moment, one of the few moments, but this last moment, Shaul does the right thing. And he realizes how vulnerable he's left the country. He retreats from his campaign against David, and he moves up north to deal with the Plishtim, to his credit. And you can only imagine how conflicted that must have made. The next phrase says, "Al kein karu l'makom ha'u sela hamachlokot." The name of that place is the rock of, how do they translate it?
They don't.
Sela machlokot. That's safe. Rock of divisions.
Okay, but in this one,
it says sela hamachlokot. Right.
Yes.
Okay, because the question is, what is machlokot referring to? It comes from the root chalek, to divide. And there are many ways to divide, the interpretation of to divide. Right? Machlokot can mean several things. If you look at the Radak, Yep. V'chein, hu omer bedrash, ma'u sela machlokot, amr Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni, shesham nechlaku giborim shel Shaul al David. מהם היו אומרים, עד שבן ישי בידינו לא נפנה ממנו. ומהם אמרו, מלחמת ישראל קודמת, שבן ישי מצוי לנו בכל שעה. מחלוקת. מחלוקת between the forces of Shaul and the forces of Shaul. It's what you call an internal conflict within Shaul's own camp. Some who said, we're not leaving here until
We catch David.
Others saying, talking
we'll
about
have other opportunities.
David's not going anywhere. The plishtim are our primary responsibility. And you can imagine the conflict within Shaul's own forces. We're this close. What do you mean call us back from the front? Retreat! What do you mean retreat? We're this close. No, we're going to retreat. So that's the two versions of the story. There's another suggestion that Radak makes with regards to David's forces. I'll show you another possibility, which I think is actually probably closest to Pshat, which is why it's not Tzela HaMachloket, but Tzela HaMachlokot. A machlaka is a, what's in Israeli military terms, what's a machlaka?
Like a section of...
It's a division.
Uh-huh.
What's a division in military terms?
Like
a unit, right?
So a rock of divisions, meaning military divisions, machlokot. That's why it's machlokot and not machloket. Okay? Imagine this is the mountain. Here is David and his forces running. Correct? Where is Shaul?
On both sides.
Right. Shaul's forces are otrim et David.
Like a crab.
Right? Like in a pincer attack. And so that will also be the reference to Sela HaMachlokot, the divisions, the divide, the rock in which Shaul's forces were divided into, or the rock of Shaul's divisions versus David's divisions. In all cases, this is the rock in which they were separated, divided, came within contact, or that Shaul's forces himself were divided. But I think closest, although it's not, I don't think it's the pshat, but the closest to the taste, the sense of what this message of this parak is about. Look at Rashi. Sela machlokot shehaya libo shel Shaul chaluk l'shte deot im lashuv latzil et arzo miyad plishtim o lirdof litfos et David ken targumo Yonatan. The machloket, says Rashi, is not between the forces of Shaul and the forces of Shaul, but it's an internal conflict in Shaul himself. The moment Shaul turns back, it's because you can feel the conflict within Shaul. He's this close, and he's been called back from the front, or to the front. And I think the reason why I think it's so close to the pshat is because of the way this pasuk reads. Vayashav Shaul mirdof acharei David vayelach likat plishtim. Shaul retreats to go and pursue David. There, go and pursue the plishtim. Therefore, they call the place Sela Machlokot. Right. So, if it was referring to the division of the forces, it should have been named before. And Shaul's forces are surrounding David. They call the place Sela Machlokot. But the fact that the naming in the text in the story is in the pasuk which describes Shaul's retreat, at least hints to the fact that what's here is a picture of the internal dynamic, the internal conflict within Shaul himself. And this very dark chapter, very dark story in David's life, at least ends with a glimmer of some kind of light, some kind of hope, that Shaul at the last second does what is right, and at the same time, David, whose tefillot we just read, his prayers were
answered. Could he not have left some people to go after him?